Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day.
Good morning, everyone. It is the 30th of January, and this is Faith Radio Mornings. Our show is part of the Faith Radio Network, where we cover the news and the topics of the day from a distinctly Christian perspective, keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Paul Perot and Rachel Sutton, who produce the show, bring guests from around our country to talk about these topics from a distinctly Christian perspective. And of course, Paul Perot, the news certainly this week has been the weather, not just in the Midwest, all over the country. It has been cold just about everywhere I can see on what would be allegedly the heat map of the United States, but there's nothing but heat out there, and certainly here in Minneapolis at minus 30, my car said this morning. I can't remember ever seeing a temperature like that on my car thermometer.
Well, officially in the Twin Cities, last I saw was negative 28.
28 is, and the record for today is what?
30.
So maybe my car is a couple of degrees off. There's a little bit of variability there.
Your car just wants to be a record breaker.
Apparently. Well, I was just concerned about getting to studio. I thought if my car can hold up in this weather and cut through the lack of air that is at this temperature, I would feel pretty good.
No, actually, the air's more dense at this temperature.
It's dead. See, now you're sort of the crack scientist of the Faith Radio Morning staff, and you said earlier this morning that my PhD, and you know, there's a whole lot that I don't know from my doctorate, and I think you're probably correct
about
that.
You're talking about density here, you know? Things cold, they become more dense.
Oh, interesting.
So the air is probably a little thicker right now.
Well, we're going to have to get Professor Dale Gentry back on the air here from Northwestern, who covers all these scientific things. And I know Rachel Sutton is living close by, but Rachel, I'm guessing you didn't walk in this morning, because my understanding is within about 5 minutes outside, the skin freeze is solid at that point.
Yeah, I heard that, and there was absolutely no desire to walk. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
There you go. And you could walk. It's only a few blocks.
You could. So, Paul, what are we seeing moving forward here in terms of today and tomorrow? Is it yesterday was such an unusual day in that the temperatures plummeted throughout the day. Is it going to kind of be steady throughout today? Are we going to see any warming trend at all?
Well, it depends. I mean, let's see. They're looking for a balmy high of 20 below in Fargo today. Here in the Twin Cities, about 15 below. So, you know, the temperatures are going to go up a little, because right now, last I saw in Fargo, they were at about 32 below.
Yeah, I keep thinking about our listeners in sort of the northern Minnesota area, the Fargo area, and just there isn't a lot up in those areas that can really even break the wind. So if the wind is coming, it just must cut through everything.
I've lived up there 6 years, and there's nothing to stop the wind.
Well, I'm sure wherever you're listening this morning, that is probably cold where you are. We would love to get your text in studio. You can give us a little temperature update, see if we can break that official record of 30 degrees below zero somewhere here in the Minneapolis, St. Paul, or wherever you are in your neck of the woods. So you can call or text at any time at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. We'd love to hear what the temperature is outside of your home. And we've got a great first hour ahead, too, here on Faith Radio Mornings. We're going to talk first with Drew Griffin of Providence Magazine. He covers global affairs from a distinctly Christian perspective, and he brings a lot of Christian history into the conversation to give us a better perspective about what we're seeing in some of the headlines of today. And then in the second half of this hour, Rachel, Paul, and I are going to do some reflection on Brandon Showalter's interview from this last Monday, in which he really was sounding the alarm about transgenderism and some of the social contagion our young people are experiencing as they're trying to figure out who they are from a gender standpoint. So that'll be a great first hour ahead. Welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. About 9.5 minutes after the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings for the 30th of January, and we're joined at this time by one of our good friends, Drew Griffin from Providence Magazine. He's the editor there, and we try to find good news sites here as part of Faith Radio Mornings that cover things from a trusted, credible, and Christian standpoint. And of course, providencemag.com is a great place to go for just that kind of news. Good morning, Drew.
Hey, good morning, Peter. How are you?
Well, we're pretty cold here, I got to say. You know, okay, I'm sure that we're beating a dead horse at this point, but at minus 30, it just seems like it has some traction to keep talking about the weather. How's life in your neck of the woods?
You know, it's not too bad. It's probably only like 20 degrees, but I think it's going to drop about 25 degrees throughout the day. So I think we'll be below zero. We'll join you in that below zero area here within the day.
Well, we'll happily blow it your direction, and then we'll pray for you after that time is up, Drew.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Thanks for sharing.
Absolutely. So you're recently back from Israel, if I understand correctly.
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. I got back just last week.
Well, one of the headlines that I was looking forward to talking with you about, because I can't claim a lot of understanding about exactly what's happening in Venezuela, other than that there's a whole lot of social and political unrest, it seems to me, and quite a bit of wrestling for power among some of the politicians there. So why don't you give our listeners a little sense of what's happening from the political sphere, and then some of the implications of that you and I can discuss.
Sure. Yeah. No, there's a massive a news story coming out of Venezuela where we have Nicolas Maduro, who was recently elected, if you want to call it elected, president again of Venezuela, is being challenged by the president of the National Assembly, a 35-year-old man named Juan Guaido. And he is the challenger to Nicolas Maduro, and he is challenging Maduro's government's basically the corruption that has existed there since the Hugo Chavez era, and then that corruption that began with Chavez's government has been continued with Maduro's government, and the economic situation in Venezuela has been acute over the last 10 years or so. There's been hyperinflation. One of the things that Chavez did is Hugo Chavez came to power in Venezuela when oil was extremely high. Venezuela sits on some of the largest oil reserves in the world. And so he used all of that money basically to create an artificial economic environment in Venezuela for well over a decade. So massive amounts of spending, free government programs, and it was, you know, kind of the envy of Latin America. When Chavez died and Nicolas Maduro took over, it was right around, you know, 2008, 2009, right around where the oil boom went bust in the country. And so oil, which, you know, they have a lot of, went from being worth a lot, being worth, you know, very little, and it affected their economy in horrendous ways. And yet, one of the things that they tried to do is they tried to continue that government spending. They pretended basically as if nothing had happened, as if the bust had never occurred. And so they continued to artificially kind of inflate their economy. And one of the ways they've done that is with partnerships with Russia, with China, with Iran, with Turkey, with Cuba, a number of regimes that rely on Venezuela for oil. They've kind of made pacts with the devils here in order to continue their economy. And there's been hyperinflation. There's been mass starvation. There's been a huge amount of people seeking asylum from the country. And so Juan Guaido comes up and says, hey, you know, this kind of corruption just cannot stand, and I'm going to basically declare myself president. And a number of countries within the Western Hemisphere, the United States, Canada, Mexico, and most of the countries in Latin and South America are affirming this and saying, yes, you know, we need a change in Venezuela. And so the United States is beginning to leverage sanctions. The United States is beginning to recognize the Guaido government and basically apply pressure on Maduro to step down so that Venezuela can have a new leadership and a new future. So there's a lot going on. It's a tense situation. And I would say one of the reasons why we should care, if I can just to kind of continue a little long here, is that, you know, we should care what's going on in Latin America. More Venezuelans in 2018 sought asylum in the United States than any other country in Latin America. And the whole debate that we're having currently right now with immigration of who we should let in and why we should let them in, should we build a wall, should we not, a lot of times are in response to these people who are fleeing these awful governments and governments that are oppressive and governments that are really failed states. And so we should care what's going on there. We should also be aware of the fact that when these governments get in a bad state, when they begin to fail, you know, they do make unholy alliances with basically our geopolitical foes, whether it's Russia, Turkey, Iran, China. And so what we have right now is kind of the free world versus the corrupt totalitarian states, and it's all kind of playing out in Venezuela right now. So, yeah, it's definitely a lot going on, definitely worth our attention on the part of Christians and just Americans.
Yeah, I appreciate that you're bringing that up in terms of why it matters to us, Drew, because Venezuela isn't the only country experiencing quite a bit of an economic downturn and even a crisis on those levels. And I'm curious, your perspective from history, I know that one strategy can be that a more prosperous country goes in and intervenes in some of these countries, maybe with military and economic help, tries to help rebuild that country. We've certainly seen our foreign policy be that across a few different presidents. And our current president seems to be a bit more protectionist in the sense of him saying, I don't want to intervene, and building the wall and sort of keeping people out. From a historical perspective, is one more effective than others? It just seems troubling on both sides.
Well, I think it's, you know, context is key in all of these considerations. The what we have here, I think, in this particular situation is, and what we have to watch, is the difference between the Trump administration in terms of, like, his national security advisor, John Bolton, and his State Department led by Mike Pompeo, that these you know, we have to look at what they say and kind of what their policies are versus what President Trump's statements and what his tweets are. And what I have to conclude based off of what else is going on in the world and how the State Department and how kind of the U.S. foreign policy bureaucracy is operating is that just because President Trump tweets something or says something, even though he's the president, even though he's the head of the military, commander-in-chief, it doesn't always seem to represent what the policy of the United States is and how we actually act. And so one thing that I do think is potentially concerning is John Bolton is very much taking the lead right now on the situation of Venezuela. And John Bolton is very engaging. He's a hawk, I guess, is what you would say in the old terminology in terms of being pro use of military and pro interventionist. And so I think it is something to watch, because I think what history has taught us is the choice is not binary. It's not, you know, do we do absolutely nothing or do we invade, you know, with troops on the ground and try and take over a country. There are middle ground. There's middle ground there. There are choices. There's soft power that we can exercise to exert influence. And I think having that kind of nuance and having that kind of discernment is important. And I would be very cautious against any sort of like heavy-handed intervention that would especially involve like U.S. troops or invading or anything like that in Venezuela. So I think we have to try and find a middle ground.
Drew, I appreciate those words like non-binary and nuanced in an era where things are so binary and we're sort of forced by the social media herds to choose one side or the other in this. And it sounds like we could have a thoughtful policy to help the situation on multiple levels. That's Drew Griffin from Providence Magazine. Does such a great job covering world affairs from a Christian standpoint. We'll take a short break, Drew. When we come back, I want to get your take on the fact that when we talk about corruption around this world, the United States dropped pretty significantly in the corruption index, meaning that we're becoming, it seems, more and more corrupt in the way that we go about our own leadership. So I want to get your take on that next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Yes.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings on this frigid January morning. I know wherever you're listening around our listening audience, whether it's through our affiliates in the Midwest or through the app or online, it's pretty cold all over our country, but we're warming things up this morning with Drew Griffin of Providence Magazine. He's the editor there, and providencemag.com is a wonderful place to go as a news source to cover so many of these different things around our world from a Christian and responsible standpoint. And Drew, I have to confess, I didn't even know there was such a thing as a corruption index that somehow measured, I don't know, quantitatively, qualitatively, how corrupt a country might be. But regardless of how this corruption index works, it didn't look like good news for the United States.
Yeah, so there's a organization called the Freedom House, which is a nonprofit think tank founded, I think, in the 1940s, 1941 in New York City. And one of the things that it does is it attempts to in some kind of quantitative way, and using both quantitative and qualitative research, determine the kind of extent to which a country or government is free, and the extent to which they are, you know, an exemplar and a champion of democracy or not. And their latest report has kind of across the globe, a decrease in the number of countries that are rated free, and part of that decrease included in that decrease, they included the United States. And in 2017, which is the latest kind of data that they've concluded, and say the United States experienced its sharpest one-year drop since they started doing the survey about 40 years ago. And so they base these ratings on how elections are conducted. They base them on civil liberties and on case law and on, you know, the behavior and the ethical behavior of bureaucrats and people in office and office holders and politicians and the legal system. And so there are a number of metrics that they use to kind of measure it. I am sometimes this kind of stuff to me seems not clickbaitish necessarily, but sometimes a little bit overblown. I mean, I think the United States has its difficulties and has had its difficulties, you know, over the last several years. But I would still argue that we're probably one of the greatest exemplars of democracy and freedom in the world, and still one of the greatest champions for the world. But I think it's something that we should be vigilant constantly, that we should always be aware of the fact that freedom is something that's pretty fragile. And that the American people are pretty fickle, and our ability as a nation to remember where we come from and the sacrifice that's taken to get where we're at, our capacity to remember that is often sometimes challenged by the news of the day and things that kind of get in front of our eyes every single morning. And so I think it's worth constantly reminding, constantly being vigilant against whenever corruption begins to kind of rear its ugly head, and respect the process, the legal process, when that corruption is being challenged. So it's an interesting study. It's something that I think is worth us paying attention to. But I'm not ready to give up on the United States quite yet.
Talking with Drew Griffin this morning from Providence Magazine. And Drew, we have a couple minutes left. And following up on that point about the United States, it seems to me, when you look back through history, what sort of anchored our society from maybe a moral standpoint was sort of this three-legged stool of the church and the family and the education system sort of working together to explore things like morality, to enter into stories bigger than ourselves, to just hold some of the realities of that which is good. But we've seen, obviously, quite a bit of the breakdown of the family and the church and the education system over these past maybe 20, 30 years. Is that contributing to some of what we see and some of the chaos that might be beginning to emerge around us?
Yes. I mean, I think that there's what we're seeing as the country gets larger, quite frankly, just demographically speaking, as a country gets more diverse, often a loss of a sort of a common language. And I don't mean like, you know, English. I mean, just a common kind of moral language, a common civic language, that when the country is smaller and kind of more dense and tightly wound together, it's easier to maintain that kind of common understanding. So that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't still revive the values that have united us together from the beginning. I think that the challenge becomes to advocate with greater clarity in a broader field of voices and a broader market of competing ideals, to advocate for what we believe in with greater clarity and to do so with greater strength and try and with greater conviction convince people to join our cause and to accept a moral framework that ultimately contributes to human flourishing. And so I think there's a challenge there for sure. But again, one of the beauties of America, I think, is that we still have in our creation, in our the way the country is constituted, the ability through the use of free speech, through the use of the freedom of religion, and just the ability to kind of communicate to one another. We still have access to the marketplace of ideas and the ability to talk to our fellow countrymen and kind of convince them of the values of that kind of moral understanding and that moral framework, and how regardless of whether you're religious or not, or whether you believe in God or not, that there is a universal a benefit that comes from accepting what we know to be God's truth, which is planted on every human soul. And so that's the challenge that we have, and I'm so incredibly grateful that we live in a country where we have the capacity to articulate those values and take control of the direction of the country. So that is our challenge.
Oh, Drew, and thanks so much for joining us. The material is great. We could have had another hour of conversation about so many of these different directions, but appreciate the work that you do at Providence Magazine. Again, if you're listening this morning, really recommend going to providencemag.com to read about some of these headlines with the intersection of our historical Christianity. So, Drew, stay warm. We will blow some cold weather your direction, and then we'll pray over you at the end of that.
Well, thank you, Peter. I appreciate it, and I will forgive you for your sharing this cold weather. And hey, I wish you well. As you, I believe this may be one of the last times that you and I circle up. So I wish you well in your next endeavor.
Well, I really appreciate that, Drew. It's been a blast to talk to you over these past few months, and certainly I'll be substitute hosting, and we'll make sure when I'm in this chair again that we get you on, because it's certainly really fun to chat. So have a great rest of the week and weekend ahead, Drew.
All right, take care. Stay warm.
We'll take a break here for some Lighten Up and some bottom of the hour news. And when we come back for the second half of this hour, Paul Perreault and Rachel Sutton in studio will join me, and we're going to have a roundtable conversation about some of the headlines coming out around transgenderism and gender fluidity, and some of what we covered earlier this week with Brandon Showalter, the Christian Post, exploring what some of our young people are facing and some really troubling decisions. Text from our listener friend Terry from Duluth says that it is minus 32 degrees in Duluth, Minnesota, with biting wind. But he pulled out his winter coat for the first time this year. Couldn't be prouder of you, Terry, as a fellow Minnesotan. I know somebody was walking into Target the other day when it was about zero outside with just his overalls, and just thought, really is interesting to see how we handle the weather here in Minnesota. I also see that the United States Postal Service is going to suspend delivery in several Midwest states. Glad to see that. The postal people so often are not thanked as often as they should be for what they have to traverse around our neighborhoods and avoiding animals and pets and all sorts of situations. So glad that you get the day off and stay warm inside. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by good friend Nicole J. Phillips, who tells great stories of kindness. And yesterday, she shared some ideas of how we can spread kindness even though it's cold.
I think that this time, especially because it is so cold, you're not going to find people who are like, why are you knocking on my door to see if I'm okay? Like you might, you know, in the middle of springtime. If you're going to a neighbor's door and you're just saying, hey, I just wanted to check in on you. Are you okay? I think that they're going to feel loved from that. You know, they might kind of give you a funny look, but you'll turn around, go back to your own house, and they're thinking, wow, somebody just cared about me. And, you know, some people love to spend their cold time indoors with kids or without kids, baking or cooking or things like that. And so what a terrific baking day. Just go and, you know, make a whole bunch of cookies, and maybe tomorrow you can figure out where they should go. And I'm sure the Holy Spirit will lead you to somebody who would be delighted to be taking a little bit of cookies.
So delightful to have Nicole on the program yesterday. She does such a great job inspiring us all for just sort of the small act of kindness. Certainly when I was growing up, they were called random acts of kindness, and it still applies generation to generation. If you want to catch her entire segment, you can go to myfaithradio.com and search for The Morning Show, and you can hear all of what Nicole had to say in about 20 minutes or so of telling stories of kindness. Well, up next, after a short break, we're going to play a clip from an event that the Heritage Foundation held here in the last couple of days, in which we're going to hear the story from an anonymous mom and her journey with transgenderism and how she really was shut out by sort of the socialist agenda. And we'll talk about that and what's facing our young kids next here on Faith Radio Mornings.
One leader told me recently that pastors should only, quote, preach Jesus, end of quote. I have a couple questions to ask him. This is Jim Garlow. Are you suggesting William Wilberforce, who gave so much fighting slavery, was wrong? Are you telling me Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who laid down his life for truth during World War II in Germany, was wrong? If the Bible really does have answers, why be afraid to speak out on these issues? In an attempt to remain neutral, pastors who are afraid they might be identified with a political party stay silent on critical social issues. We're not beholden to any political party, but that shouldn't keep us from speaking out strongly, biblically, on the issues, and working and voting for candidates that deserve our support. Our hope is not in a political party. It is in God and His truths. Be well-versed at jimgarlow.com. Live out your faith. This is Jim Garlow.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and I'm joined in studio at this time now by Paul Perreault and Rachel Sutton, two of the producers for our show, that part of this show that really make it flow smoothly day in and day out and do such a great job all throughout the morning, just bringing news and topics of the day into studio for us. And Paul, I know one of our main guests this last week was Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post. He kicked us off pretty early on that Monday morning. It was the first segment. It was 6:05 local time, and we jumped right in, and it turned out to be a really difficult subject. I really appreciated the way that he handled it, but it was hard to just hear a bit about what's going on in terms of the gender dysphoria among our kids, the questions that they're asking at very early ages, sort of the agendas or even the responsibilities that schools now have to teach different gender models to kids at very early ages. And it's one of those things, Paul, that I have seen in my class at Northwestern, here where I teach, on sexuality, and I've been troubled by it. I don't know that I would have gone to the place of alarmed by it, but Brandon really has been sounding the alarm on some of these things for the past couple weeks. This is his field that he covers journalistically for the Post week in and week out.
Yeah, that's one of the major things he covers for the Christian Post, and he has, I follow him on Facebook, and he has become more and more and more alarmed. And after we had him on Monday, because he was talking about some of the more recent stuff, he then posted an event that the Heritage Foundation did on Monday,
right.
Later in the day. And it's the video is online. You can find it on Heritage YouTube channel or at their website. It's about a little over an hour long, and I started watching it. I still haven't gotten all the way through it. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, you were texting me on Monday night. You said, have you seen this video? And you said you're using the word disturbing.
And that was mild.
Right. And you said you couldn't get through it because it was just that disturbing. And one of the things I really appreciate about Brandon's coverage of this this news in our country that's ongoing is that he really investigates it from all angles. He doesn't stay anchored to maybe a conservative platform or a liberal platform. He talks to everybody about the different dimensions of this. And that's what I appreciated about this video link that you sent me, was that the Heritage Foundation was holding a panel with people who were far from conservative in their beliefs, and yet they're explaining their experience about this.
Right. There are a bunch of liberal panelists. Oftentimes, I think they're all females, and they're oftentimes called TERFs. I think that's kind of a derogatory term, trans exclusionary radical feminists. They are feminists. They are leftists. I mean, we're talking women's liberation front women who are right now, they got their hands up in the air going, this is insane what's happening under a lot of the new transgender policies. and the advocacy being done there and how it's devastating kids.
Certainly, and I know we have a clip that you found from the Heritage Foundation video. It's about 2.5 minutes long. I thought it'd be a good thing to play for the listeners this morning. Rachel's going to get that started, and then we can keep having a conversation about what we hear.
My daughter, age 14, at age 14, spontaneously decided she is actually a male. After suffering multiple traumatic events in her life and spending a large amount of time on the internet, she announced that she was trans. Her personality changed almost overnight, and she went from being a sweet, loving girl to a foul-mouthed, hateful, pansexual male. At first, I thought she was just going through a phase, but the more I tried to reason with her, the more she dug her heels in. Around this time, she was diagnosed with ADHD, depression, and anxiety. But mental health professionals seemed mainly interested in helping her process her new identity as a male and to convince me to accept the notion that my daughter is actually my son. At age 16, my daughter ran away and reported to the Department of Child Services that she felt unsafe living with me because I refused to refer to her using male pronouns or her chosen male name. Although the department investigated and found she was well cared for, they forced me to meet with a trans-identified person to educate me on these issues. Soon after, without my knowledge, a pediatric endocrinologist taught my daughter, a minor child, to inject herself with testosterone. My daughter then ran away to Oregon, where state law allowed her, at the age of 17, without my consent or knowledge, to change her name and legal gender in court and undergo a double mastectomy and a radical hysterectomy. My once beautiful daughter is now 19 years old, homeless, bearded, in extreme poverty, sterilized, not receiving mental health services, extremely mentally ill. The level of heartbreak and rage I am experiencing as a mother is indescribable. Why does Oregon law allow children to make life-altering medical decisions? As a society, we are rightly outraged about female circumcision. So why are doctors who took an oath to first do no harm allowed to sterilize and surgically mutilate mentally ill, delusional children?
Paul, I hear a letter like that, and again, I want to emphasize a couple of things before we continue this conversation. First of all, this was not from a conservative Christian parent. No. This is somebody who would be described as very liberal in their point of view on so many different kinds of issues, explaining how troubling the situation was with their daughter. And if you're listening this morning and you were going to watch some of this video that is posted on the Heritage Foundation site, I just want to offer the disclaimer that it really has a lot of very disturbing and kind of graphic material, so be very careful in engaging with it. And yet it's an incredibly important conversation. We can't shy away from it.
Yeah. In that clip we heard, I did cut out a section of it that I thought, okay, I don't even want to go there on the air. What we had on the air was bad enough.
Right.
But it got worse. And it's like, you know, this is mind-blowing.
It is.
Totally mind-blowing.
And I don't even know where to hardly begin the conversation other than that, again, from the perspective of the class that I've taught these past 10 years, I often am given a clue about what's going on socially for our young people just simply by the questions that they ask in my class. And we have a lot of room in the class for them to ask their questions. I have them actually do an assignment where they go interview 10 to 15 different people, and they get 3 questions per person. If you could ask any question about sexuality, what would it be? And really interesting what's there. And 10 years ago, Paul, 8 years ago, 6 years ago, even 4 years ago, there was really nobody asking questions about gender dysphoria, transgenderism, as they went out and did all these surveys. It's been maybe the last 2 years, and it has absolutely exploded in that time.
Wow. So, and, you know, you can contrast that. It was, what, 3-4 years ago, the whole Obergefell, and when the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage, and then that just opened the floodgates to a lot of other sexual expressions, as they like to say, and gender expressions. In 4 years.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that Brandon has talked about as he's been on the program is that some of the decisions then being made to sort of rectify somebody's sense of dysphoria are biological in their origin. And so as this mother referenced, there's mastectomies being done, there's hysterectomies, there's other procedures that are terribly troubling that are irreversible at the end of the day. And so we're making decisions with our kids at very early ages when is teenage and adolescent life not confusing and not difficult? And so these are really hard conversations, and don't want to be alarmist, but we do want to be very serious in terms of what's happening with our kids in our country. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation on gender dysphoria and what's facing our youth here on Faith Radio Mornings. 9 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and Paul Perreault, Rachel Sutton, and I are having a conversation about some of the difficult things that our youth are facing, specifically in their sexuality and so many of the questions around transgenderism and gender dysphoria. And again, Paul, that Heritage Foundation video, we do recommend watching it to get a sense of what's really going on among so many of these conversations, but it is a very troubling video, so we do want to offer that disclaimer.
Yes, it is very troubling. And that, when I was listening to that video, I remember an article. It was a New York Times editorial from a person who was defending my right to have these surgeries done. I know it's not going to, and the person fully admitted, I've got depression. I got these issues going on. And this is not going to solve it, but I got to have it.
Right.
It's like, what?
And I think that's one of the hardest pieces of this, is that usually something like gender dysphoria is also as part of a bigger pot of maybe some depression and some anxiety and a lot of different realities that are all mixed together. And there's the sense in which that there's sort of the silver bullet answer. If we can just go on to hormonal therapy, if we can adjust sort of some of our physical traits and features. But certainly the leading sex reassignment surgeon in the world, he is out of Russia, and he's recently come out and said, I will stop doing these kind of surgeries because we're not seeing any kind of rectification for somebody's sense of dysphoria. It's actually bringing great harm. There's other people I know, a liberal lesbian, Camille Paglia, who is a scholar on the East Coast, says that this is actually considered child abuse. So it's so interesting when we're seeing some of these things that are coming out, and yet there really is a significant social agenda to make sure that our kids are being quote-unquote educated about their sexuality at very early ages.
Yeah, and the one other aspect that was in the video is, okay, we can talk about the psychological, the sociological. What about the long-term physical aspects? What are we doing to these kids when you're doing hormone blockers? Now, you're meddling with the natural maturation process of the human body. What are the long-term health effects? How is this going to affect their long-term physical health? Because their bones are not going to develop. A lot is not going to develop properly in a youth, because that's all finely tuned. God, whether you want to say God created, or you want to, for those who are liberal saying evolution, it's all a finely tuned thing that you're messing with.
Right.
And we're going to find out in several years here, kids who have had the stuff done, what's going to happen to them long term?
Yeah, you make such a good point, because in God's kingdom economy, that right and wrong is discerned by the fruit that's being born that ripples out into the future. And I think we're seeing sort of the first effects of some of the fruit. I know Brandon was talking about that on Monday a little bit, is that it is not simplifying life, and we're not becoming maybe more enlightened. There's other things that are going on. And Rachel Sutton, I know you were homeschooled, but at 22 years old, I'm guessing this is such a recent phenomenon, and that it probably wasn't part of much of your conversation in adolescence as a teenager. I think about how social contagion works. There gets to be sort of this herd mentality. We all start doing the same sort of thing. And in my time in the 1980s, it was partying on the weekends. Those kinds of ideas was a social contagion. I don't know if you even saw much of this when you were growing up as a youth.
Yeah, it actually was quite prevalent in my high school, I would say. So about 7th grade was when I really learned that any of this stuff was a thing. I was fairly sheltered, I guess would be the term, until that point. But then people were talking about it all the time, and definitely that kind of contagion thing where people start deciding, well, I have to figure out who I am, and this is an added aspect of that when people start doing that, and that's the cool thing to do in a group. So it was really interesting to see people wrestling with this idea that they're in the wrong body, instead of the fact that maybe my brain is thinking something that it shouldn't be.
Sure.
And I think once you start going down that road, when you guys are talking about hormone blockers and actually physically changing things, like, that's super dangerous. But I didn't see a ton of that yet.
Yeah, I'm mindful of the old theological quote that my soul and my heart is anxious until it finds its rest in thee. And I think for all of us, we're anxious regardless of whether we're believers or not. But the only place to really see a peace and a rest from that anxiety is in God himself. But it's pretty common for youth to try to figure out how to relieve the anxiety in a variety of ways. And we pursue any number of illusions relative to that, whether it's trying to build our resume, whether it's trying to order ourselves sexually, whether it's trying to get that relationship right, or whatever it is. And this is just another option now. But boy, it's a really troubling one.
It is. I don't know what more I can really say on that one.
Yeah.
It's just again, if you watch the video, you're forewarned. It is hard, but it's important information.
Yeah, well, so I just wanted to address what Brandon was talking about earlier this week. If you're listening this morning as a parent or a grandparent, really important to maybe begin to educate yourselves on this, because we are the ones that hold the fabric of the future for our kids. And some of the first steps we can do in some of our confusion is to begin to educate ourselves, again, as parents and grandparents, to shepherd our kids towards the future. So Paul and Rachel, thanks for the good conversation this morning. Take a short break, wrap up the first hour of our show, and preview what's coming up in hour two for Faith Radio Mornings. Again, really appreciate the engagement of Paul and Rachel in this conversation and the Heritage Foundation video. Tommy Binion was on yesterday morning with us from the Heritage Foundation. We talked about it a bit as well. And so even as we raise the alarm and are alarmed by what's facing our youth, we do know that we're part of a kingdom that knows no end. And Jesus has a funny way of continuing things into the future of wholeness and health. And it does take our active engagement in that as we fix our eyes on him as part of this kingdom. So that is where our hope lies. That tomb is empty. There always is hope and always is future in the midst of our confusion. So again, Paul and Rachel, thank you for that part of the conversation. We hope you're staying warm this morning wherever you're listening in the Midwest. I know, as we said, we had our friend Terry from Duluth text that it's 32 degrees below zero in Duluth with a biting wind. So I think that must make it about minus 120 from the wind chill factor. I don't know how that stuff is calculated, but all I know is it is breathtakingly cold. And to celebrate the cold this morning, Paul Perreault and Rachel Sutton found what is considered to be the Minnesota doxology. And we're going to play just a quick clip of the doxology for you here as we wrap up our first hour of the show.
Praise God, from whom all blizzards flow. Praise him at 35 below. Praise him in snowdrifts 10 feet deep. Praise him though winter makes us weep. It's really cold.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.